Welcome back. So in this next 50 minutes or so, we're just going to put a pretty high-level look at some aspects of considering the performance of your Silverlight applications on Windows Phone. I advise you, some of this is going to be a cut-down version of a really, really good video that's on Channel 9 on this topic by Jamie Rodriguez I forget his guest name. Anyway, the tester team who really know this stuff inside out. So I'm going to introduce the most important aspects of what they talked about, but I advise you to go along and watch the full video as well if you really need to get into this sort of things. So what do we mean by performance? Now, you know, clearly it means different things to different people. And here we got this absolutely, well, I don't know, is that your car of your dreams, Rob?
No.
No, okay. Well, it looks like a lot of fun. It's certainly...
I wouldn't fit in it.
Certainly...
My head would stick out the top. I know these things.
Certainly high performance. This is what we're talking about, a real thoroughbred racer. But anyway, you know, a Formula One racer may look at that and think, well, that's a bit underpowered. So, you know, that's not too exciting. But what about the phone situation? Oh, yeah, here's a Formula One racing car. So they might think a bit differently about that. But... Windows Phone, it is a high-performance machine, but it's kind of, you know, a specialised one. It's a superbike, not a supercar. So we have to be aware of its strengths and its weaknesses and make sure that we can make the most of this. And to do that, you need to understand what are the trade-offs and what works and what doesn't. So there's, you know, limited resources, really. So, as a summary, for me, the road to great performance is understanding Silverlight architecture and the way that apps are working, the memory management, and no surprise, just code smart, okay? Now, for me, I think there's two ways that we need to think about performance with relation to Silverlight applications. There's two distinct sort of angles to it. There's the application developer's perspective on it, and this is all about the coding smart sort of thing. And if you, when you come to submit your applications to Marketplace and you read all about the requirements and things that they'll be testing for, the key one that you want to notice is that you have to have your first screen on startup. Your first screen has to show within 5 seconds. If that doesn't happen, the platform will kill your app. And if that happens during the ingestion process in Marketplace, they will reject your application. Now, it's 5 seconds kind of sounds like... Actually, to me, it sounds like a horrendously short time.
I think it's quite a long time, personally. But
do you think so? Yeah, well...
If I'm waiting 5 seconds for my app to start, yeah. Sitting on my phone going, boink,
well, exactly, one, exactly.
Two, that, yeah. That's why they've done it. I mean,
but the interesting thing is that for Windows Mobile in the old days, the compact framework days of Windows Forms apps, you know, 10 seconds was quite typical for a startup time. Now, like, okay, it is the compact framework still on Windows Phone 7 that is the underlying .NET runtime, but they have done a huge amount of optimization work. And also a lot of the work that they've done at the Marketplace validation, and then they slap a digital signature on it, means that some of the runtime checks we used to have to do at runtime at launch don't happen anymore. So the apps start phenomenally fast compared to the bad old days. But to hit that 5 seconds, you've got to be smart about what you're doing. So coding smart about this and making sure that the code that you execute during the startup in your constructors and your on-navigated to event handlers is as minimal as is required to get the app up and running. Now, so there's that side of things. There's the coding, the application developer, the person who's kind of doing all the background logic, the view model, and all this kind of stuff has to worry about. And then there's also the perspective of the user experience engineer. So this is the person who lives in Blend, who really understands Silverlight and is working in XAML and in the designers and is looking at animations and these kind of aspects. So very graphically rich applications that you really need to understand how Silverlight is rendered and what are the trade-offs there. So I'm going to look at those two perspectives of performance. So first of all, at startup, I mentioned the 5 seconds thing. The first thing you need to do is use a splash screen, you know. So a splash screen is you get one in a default in the project anyway, and called application splash screen.jpg, One trick you can do is actually capture an image of your entry form and use that as your splash screen. So it could be, you know, an unpopulated image of your starting screen.
You can also grey them out too, so it's obvious it isn't working.
That's right. And then, so they're seeing your opening screen, they think it's actually a static image, and then it will kind of dissolve into real data as the actual screen shows, and it will be, the user won't discern that you've actually switched from a splash screen to the real form. So that's one trick you can do. Just have a nice engaging splash screen to advertise your products, the other option. But while the splash screen is up, that's when your main form constructors and your application logic is executing. And like I said, you've got 5 seconds and then that form has to be up, otherwise your app will be killed. So there's a few tricks about making sure you can get in within that 5 seconds. Like I said, the splash screen itself will not show until your app.xaml constructor is complete, so keep that lean. And remember also that tombstoning, when you're coming back from tombstoning, is also a startup scenario. That also needs to complete within 5 seconds, and the form that you're on, the page that you're on, needs to show again. And that's something that people forget about as well. I mean, if you're storing a load of data and running a load of logic and you're on Navigator 2 Event Handler, which fires when you come back from tombstoning, you can have problems in getting it active again, and the system will kill it if it's not actually active and ready for user input within 5 seconds. So a couple of other things you can do on startup. There are some checks, runtime checks that have to be done, digital signature checks on the assemblies. And the bigger your assembly is, the longer that will take. So one thing you can do actually is have your opening start screen to be as minimalist as possible in a small assembly, and that's the only thing in it. And then it can navigate to, you can have your next page actually in a different assembly. And this is all delaying this work that has to be done in order to validate your code and validate the digital signature, make sure nothing's tampered with it, all the sort of stuff that has to happen at runtime to guarantee the integrity of your application. A few things to watch out for. Panorama controls, you know, the load time consists of all the panels with the panorama. So you have to be a wee bit careful with that one. With the pivot control, if you saw the presentation this morning, you do get these pivot item loading events and unloading events, which does allow you to instantiate the contents of a particular panel in the pivot only when it's needed rather than at startup. So that's another nice trick with the pivot control that you can take advantage of. Another things not mentioned on here is if you're deserializing data out of isolated storage, you might definitely want to consider doing that on a background thread. Obviously, you've got to be careful about the logic in your application to make sure you're not trying to do anything early on in your startup code with something that hasn't been deserialized yet. Synchronization needed there. But
you could put a progress bar up. Yep. Of a bit being brought back in after you've got control, and that would satisfy the 5 seconds.
Exactly,
rule
you've got something
and
up and showing.
And give you a place to move forward from,
Yep, that's right. Watch for network bound controls. Like in the last hour, we were looking at the Bing Maps controls.
Yeah,
that's
that.
A classical one, you know. If you've got a Bing Maps control in your page and its visibility is set to visible in your startup, that will kill you straight away. That's a complete no-no. It's not going to work. You need to actually just delay the loading of that Bing Maps control until the form itself has displayed.
Because that kind of presupposes you have network at the time it comes back.
Well,
because if your app hasn't got any network at all, it'll be stuck pretty much forever.
Images is a good one. Okay, these are decoded in software. JPEGs are much faster than pings. You use PNGs, of course, because you can have alpha and you can have transparency. So quite often you need to use them. But if you don't need the transparency, use a JPEG because the decoding is very much faster. Now, the other thing with reducing your DLL size and keeping that verification time to a minimum is if you include these images as content rather than resources. In content, they're just included in the ZAP as separate files. If they're resources, they're actually compiled inside the DLL, and of course they add to the increase in the size of it. So that's another good tip. Before leaving, this is a very quick run-through of some aspects of performance from the application developer's point of view. And I wanted to just highlight this one, which was blogged recently by actually a couple of guys in the Windows Phone team, both on the same day. They didn't know each of them were doing it. They kind of blogged on the same subject at the same time. But data virtualization is an interesting one. So this is an interesting technique with list boxes, it's a concept of only loading just enough data to show in your UI and no more, rather than the whole list. So if you know, if you've got, and this works with kind of complex and moderately complex data items, maybe you know you've got like 3,000 images stored in isolated storage, and you need to pull them all into a list.
Well, the one for me is picking an album from your Medius, because you've got all those album covers
indeed,
and things.
Yeah.
Could be 100, so you have to find the one and display it.
Yep. So I've got a demo of this one. I've got a simple list, so it couldn't be simpler. The UI is very, very simple. Here we are. It's actually, we've got a start button, which loads in the data, and then it will show a list here. We can jump to an index there. Setup is something I've added just to load in some, it's a rather clunky demo, this, but we can actually take some pictures. So I can run it, first of all, in the emulator. First of all, what we're going to do is just take three pictures. So here's the first one, and you get a random blob on a background. We'll take another one. Take that, yep, accept it. And a third one. Got that, accept it. And then I hit start, and what it will do is it will create a list of data items. Let me show you the code. So what it does, effectively, I'm just using those photos as images because they're quite expensive objects. And what it does is it duplicates that for every item in the list. So every item in the list actually has a unique image, but it's a copy of one of those three photos.
So
I took.
We haven't got just three photos and loads of references. We have.
Well, in fact, we've got 500 in this case.
Okay.
Now, that was running in the emulator. Now, I'm not going to do it because it would. But if I ran that on the device, 500, it might just survive. 600, probably crash. Memory exceeded. Okay. We've got limited. Obviously, in the emulator, you're running within the confines of our laptop here, so there aren't any of the memory constraints we've got. But if you run that on a real device, it will crash. So that was the logic. So I created, just to show you what I did there, I had an array of data item objects. So the data item, if I just go and show you what that looks like, is down here.
In a minute, text-wise.
Yeah, so the data item class has a public property of an index, a text, we override the toString, and then actually it has an image in it. So every data item has an image, so that's why we're duplicating those photos that I took. And we create an array of 500 in this case, and there we go around, and we just 500 times we create a new data item, stick them into our list, and actually we go and get the photo. So we've actually got image objects in every single item. So like I say, try and do that on a real device, it's not going to fly. So comment out that, and instead, stop that. Instead, I'm going to comment out that and bring in this one. So this is the variation. I've got a virtualized data source. Okay. Now, there's two things on this. First of all, you have to have a data template, an item template in the list box for this virtualization to work. And then what you do is you bind as the item source of this list box has to be bound to an object, a collection that implements iEnumerable. And actually, not all of iEnumerable. So those are the two magic ingredients. It's got to be an item template. And it must implement iEnumerable. So let's go and have a look at this virtualized data source. iList.
Yeah.
It's very important. iList. And at the moment, we've got 100 items in this list. Now, the important thing to observe with iList, you have to implement the methods of iList. Not all of them, though. So what we don't implement is these are all methods of iList, add, clear, contains, none of them are needed, insert, you can read them all there. Don't need any of them. The only ones you need are is get, really, okay, and count. It needs to know how many members there are in it. Index of, count, these are the three, count, index of, and get. They're the only ones you need to implement. And then the get one is interesting, that basically the get is indexed in. Get is the get method in iList is always comes with an index. So essentially, you just have to go into your underlying data collection and fetch it. And this gives you the opportunity because it only fetches the ones it needs and a few either side. So you just basically have to instantiate them on demand. So This sample also has a simple cache, so that having created an object, it does maintain a slightly memory cache. So if you go back to get one you just got before, it will get it out of the cache rather than rebuild it. But if it's not in the cache, then actually all that happens is we create a, here we go, create a new data item, set the index to that, and then you go off and get, in this case, fetch photo goes and fetches one of those photos out of isolated storage. So we do the heavy lifting work only when it's needed.
Could that be a network-based connection to fetch that, or is there a performance
No, we're talking about good UI here. So if you're scrolling up and down a list,
you don't want it stuttering.
That's right. You want
it stuttering. Fast. Yeah. Okay.
So at the moment we've got 100, but this is not very good. How many should I put in this?
10,000.
No, up a bit. Is that more?
A million?
10,000 not enough.
A million?
A million. Okay, let's have a million objects.
So we're going to have a list with a million objects.
So it's a list with a million objects.
Okay.
Yep.
In the device.
Well, I would run it. I can run it. Yeah. Do you want to run the device? Let's run it in the device. Okay.
There's a guy here rolling his eyes at the back. He's sort of.
Okay. So. Now, if you see in the camera, I'm just going to have to take some pictures. So I need my raw materials here.
Get a picture of.
Blooming Egg.
I'm afraid. No, there's a reason why you can't do it, because just before lunch I was saying you can't take pictures with the camera if your program cameras.
I could kill Zune and I could go and run this other utility, in the interest of moving on, we'll move on.
I had a great idea. We'll move on. We'll just.
Yeah, I'll do it in the emulator, but it would have been fun to do it in the device. But remember we need three photos just for our raw data. Try another one, okay, and our third one as well that we're going to plug into this. I could have actually, it would have been easier to include some JPEGs in the, but I had this code lying around and basically this was a last minute addition. So then we're going to create our collection of our list.
This is going to make a million objects.
A million objects. That was
actually quite quick, yes.
Yep, and what I want to do is show you the output window as well. Because down here,
that's actually coming back from when they're requested.
Debug, yeah. So you can show that actually it's requested 20 items from our collection, and we've got debug.writelines in our virtualizing data just to show what's actually being asked for. So now we can jump to let's jump to 1,000, and bang, straight to 1,000, and move that out of the way. And you can see there in the background in the output window, it's created new instances of this, so it's creating them on demand, and you get good fast performance, but it's only, you can see the output window changing there, go back and it picks up cached items. So lovely technique for handling big lists of expensive objects.
Stock items, that kind of stuff, just builds it on the fly as required.
That's right, so that's nice quite stuff. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so to use that, you actually pick up the stuff from these blogs, is that right?
Read the blogs by Peter Tor and all, some of the other guys on the Windows Phone Developer blog. You get a lot of good tips coming out. Yeah. You could read our blogs as well, actually, if you wish.
That's true, but they're full of bad jokes, aren't they,
in my
case.
Yep.
Thank you.
Okay, so that was data virtualization. Now, I'm going to switch tack now. Let's talk about Silverlight. So now we're switching over, we're talking about Silverlight. Like I said, the channel line video goes into this in more detail. So I'm going to bring out the key points about this now. So Silverlight 3, is the runtime is Silverlight 3, but of course it's been optimized for the phone. So it's even with slow processors, and we are talking about a slower processor compared to the desktop, so they've done a lot of optimization. So we've optimized for touch, of course. There's the on-screen keyboard, all this kind of stuff. And the sensors and all the good stuff that we need since Silverlight has been extended in order to support the phone use input mechanisms and this sort of thing. And also they've changed the threading model, particularly for these devices. So the phone here actually has quite... I just want to pick out that relaxed sandbox constraints as well. So when you're running in the phone, unlike on desktop, it does run in a sandbox, it's isolated from everything else, but because of the marketplace process, the kind of runtime checks it has to do are relaxed compared to Silverlight apps in the browser. So this all helps the startup and execution time. And they have modified the threading model. So we, on this device, we have also got two threads, which is a difference from the Silverlight. So the first thing you need to do, though, is understand your Silverlight tree, the visual tree. So the XAML, you know, you kind of think, okay, it doesn't really matter where my XAML elements go in the tree, but you do need to understand, particularly when you're talking about very rich animated content, the implications of how you're animating, the kind of textures you're applying to your objects, and the way that you manipulate those objects. And one example is, if you've got a grid that's got 10 elements, a grid and then 10 elements in it, if you go in and tweak the margin, top left margin of the first item in that grid, Silverlight is going to have to go through and redraw the whole thing, because everything has to shuffle up. So you have to think about that inside of a grid. So there may be other ways of positioning your objects that would avoid all that going on.
Does that mean canvases are a good plan then? Just making things absolute?
Well, test, and I'm going to show you a lot of techniques for you can visualize the effect of doing this kind of thing. So I'm going to show you. So really, it's all about testing often and frequently in order to figure out the effect of things. So understand your visual tree and the implications of moving objects in and out of it and this kind of thing. So threading, understanding the threading. So in Silverlight on Windows Phone, well, let's first tell you, Silverlight on the browser just has a single thread, the UI thread. It's had from day one. Actually, Windows Forms had the same kind of idea. So we have a UI thread that's responsible for laying out everything, for rasterizing everything, and for executing certain animations. Now, Windows Phone does actually have a GPU in it, and the key to good Silverlight graphical performance in animations is to take advantage of that GPU. So in order to do that, they've changed the threading model. And we have obviously still have the UI thread. Everything runs on the UI thread, including obviously your application code and everything like that. But there's also this compositor thread, which is also sometimes known wrongly as the render thread. Which is responsible, is the interface between the GPU and the Silverlight runtime. So you can also have background threads and media decoding threads. So the intelligent developer would use background threads as well to reduce the loading on the UI thread. And this is really where you've got to come from, is reduce the loading on the UI thread so it can continue to be responsive because it handles user input as well. And take advantage of the compositor thread to make sure that animations and things run on the GPU. So, yeah, like I said, the UI thread is holding input, touch, layout, measuring and arranging all the elements in the visual tree. It's responsible for that and for rasterizing. It executes user code, and you have to obviously... You can have per-frame callbacks. So here we're talking about a rather rare, I think rare anyway, way of animating where you're actually calling back from the compositor thread, and you can actually do animations. You can manipulate UI elements. Every frame, we're talking up, you know, up 60 frames per second, you can call back into your code, and you can manipulate elements in code, and all that happens on the UI thread. And if you block that UI thread, then things stop. If you block the UI thread in desktop Silverlight, everything stops. Now, the interesting thing, and animations that are not done in the render thread, the compositor thread, are done on the UI thread. The other one is the compositor thread, and the compositor thread is built to be very, very lean, very lightweight. It is responsible for doing simple animations, so they are offloaded onto the compositor thread, and they are just the objects that are cached in the GPU and are animated purely on there. So this works completely independently of the UI thread and removes the responsibility for simple animations for, like, double properties and things. So if you're animating, you know, doing a double animation, which means you're animating a double property, such as... you know, left, right, and the position of an object in its canvas or whatever. Render transforms, opacity. So if you're changing the opacity of an object, making it fade in and out, that is all done on the compositor thread. Perspective transforms and rectangular clips, but non-rectangular clips and things like opacity masks, they have to be done on the UI thread. Yeah, that's right. But simple animations are all offloaded onto GPU. So this is the key to having really good graphic animation performance, is to take advantage of this. So UI thread is ticking away like that. So you handlers, the button clicks, and all this sort of stuff. And that's ticking around. And every time it's event driven, so we're going kind of sort of 60 frames per second. And every tick, it goes around and looks for any property changes on any of the UI elements. And if it finds any, then it has to go and do another layout pass and figure out the effect of these property changes on the rendering of those objects. So it does a layout pass, figures out how to position everything on the screen, queues up the rendering changes. It then does the rasterizing on the back buffer, which means it sort of draws it all to a back buffer, and then sticks it out on the screen. And then we go round and round and round again. It's a busy thing. It's the key to everything, obviously, and all your application code is also running on here. But the compositor thread, so certain animations, can be offloaded onto that, and that is running very lightweight at another 60 frames per second to actually handle these animations. We can demonstrate quite nicely how this works.
From an XNA point of view, we have this thing. Basically, you can run code in the GPU. You've got your shaders and things. Is what you're saying that Compositor is basically a shader running inside the GPU?
I don't know, because I don't know what a shader is, right?
Okay, I'll ask one of the experts this afternoon, because it sounds to me like you've basically got parallel processing. You've got some of the rendering going on inside the GPU on a separate physical
thread. It is absolutely, yeah. Totally, yeah. Parallel. And this demo shows very nicely what we're talking about.
And this is kind of why you have to have a fairly beefy graphics card in your PC.
Yes.
Run the emulator, because you have to have this separate GPU processor.
Indeed.
Which is not being emulated by the real one, because the real one's got to do the job. Yeah.
So here we've got a very simple, you see this white square on here. This white square has got a couple of animations on it, and I'll just start that. And don't worry about the shading, I'll explain that in a minute. So actually this white square, you can see it's got a transform to move it around, so it's moving around like this. And that is a simple double animation. So this is one that happens on the compositor thread. But the other thing you'll notice is that it is changing color. So what you're doing there is you're actually changing what we call a texture. The surface is being now that has to happen. A color animation like that has to happen on the UI thread. So what happens is interesting. And if you watch this, if I press this button here, this block UI, it does a horrible compute-bound loop on the UI thread. So it's going to block the UI thread. So I'm going to wait until it's a suitable color and then block it. And if you watch what's happened, so it's going up to white now. You see the color hasn't changed, but the movement's carried on. And now it's unblocked and everything is working in. The color is changing, but the movement is still going on. So the movement is going on because that is happening on the compositor thread. It's a simple animation storyboard that carries on independently of the UI thread.
So when the XAML is actually compiled to make the picture, you get a whole bunch of stuff that gets put in the compositor thread and a whole bunch that gets dealt with via the UI thread.
Well, what actually,
and they share the work out.
That's right. Well, what actually happens, as we'll show, is that surfaces like this are actually cached by the GPU. Mm. Simple things like this, they're cached, the objects are cached over there, and therefore it can operate independently of everything else that's going on.
Okay.
So this is just to illustrate how the animation system works. So there's a difference between, so quite a lot of Silverlight on desktop is frame-based animation, which means you have a certain number of frames that have to be done, so which means if you get CPU bound, so say you've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, you've got 8 frames there that you need to actually execute in order to get your animation completed. So if it's frame-based animation, when it's CPU bound, what happens is that animation will overrun. Whereas time-based animation, which is what we've got on Windows Phone, it basically just fits it in what it can and then misses bits out. But what's clear, the animation will never overrun, but you'll get stuttering.
From a game point of view, similar kind of thing, you have an update and a draw procedure, and what you're saying is that the animation update is running at the right speed, but it isn't being drawn as fast as it might be. So
that's right.
Things run at the same speed, but they stutter.
Yep. Now, we've got a number of good tools and counters that have been built in. You allow you to monitor the rendering performance and to get an idea of what is happening on the compositor thread and what's happening on the UI thread. So I'm just going to quickly run through those now. Before we do that, just want to have a word about the emulator. You just mentioned it a minute ago. So you have to be careful in doing performance testing, clearly, of your applications using the emulator, because it is running on your PC, and there's no comparison in terms of the power, but it does use a single core. You do need DirectX 10 capable graphics card, and it is bound to 60 frames per second, so it can't go any faster than on the phone. But equally, nor are we as memory or CPU constrained as we are on the phone. So some of the testing you're going to have to do, some of it you can do in the emulator, but a good amount of it you have to do actually on the real device. So these performance counters, and they are fairly tiny and hard to see, but they actually turned up in Beta 2, but we've actually added one additional counter since that. So the first one that we've got is the render thread frame rate. So this is the compositor thread frame rate. This is the first thing about these first two, and then the second one is the UI thread frame rate. You'll typically see this either zero if it's not actually animating, so you'll only see that if it's actually doing any animations, you'll see numbers in this. But 60 frames per second is excellent, and that's what you want, but it will frequently drop below that. If it's dropping down to sort of 30 frames per second, then your users are going to start seeing a degrading in performance. So the first thing to do is to keep monitoring those to figure out the effectiveness of your designs.
I mean, that's kind of interesting because in an XNA game, they cap the update rate at 30 hertz. One of the things that they actually do, they wind it back. So on Silverlight, they seem to be happy with higher performance levels than that, which is interesting.
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, on real hardware, you generally don't see 60 frames per second.
No.
So, I mean, it's designed to run at that. And the UI thread, you'll never get near that because it's always busier. It's always got stuff to do. But this is the ultimate performance check for your animations to figure out how well they are operating. Now, the third one there is a memory usage for textures. So this one is the amount of virtual memory used by your application, but it's just the video memory. So we're not talking about your working set of your app. We're not talking about how much memory your application is using, the working set of it. This is purely the video memory that's being used, the textures that have been offloaded onto the GPU. Now, the fourth one is the number of surfaces. Now, surface means... if we go back to this one, you see the shading here. This is actually indication of the surfaces. We've got there's a surface at the top, and these are sort of individual objects, if you like, that have been it's been divided up and are actually being offloaded and animated separately, or being drawn separately. So I'll show you in a minute how you can turn this visualization on. It's a very good representation of how much of your screen is being redrawn all the time. So here we've got three different ones. We've got the buttons at the bottom, the title bar, and then we've got our animated rectangle in the middle there. So that's the number of surfaces. Now, number of intermediates is kind of a subdivision of that. So this is the Silverlight runtime, takes a look at these and kind of figures out that, well, actually, if I chopped that one up into this and this, we're going to get better performance. So it's an optimizations that it does. So that's a measure of the number of temporary objects that the runtime has created for you. And the last one is quite interesting, is the fill rate counter. So what you want to be doing is getting as much onto the compositor thread so it's executing the GPU as possible, but there is a limit, of course. You can have too much of a good thing. And the fill rate counter, I'll come on to in a little while, is a measure of how many pixels you are throwing out onto the GPU. You can overtax it, and if you're getting to sort of a measure it's of three or more, your performance will start to degrade and your render rate, thread rate, frame rate will start to degrade. To turn those counters on is the code at the top there, application.current.host.settings.enableFrameRateCounter=true. In fact, if you create an app in using the new project templates, this actually is enabled by default, so you have to go and look in your app.xaml.cs to turn it off. Because Microsoft really want you to look at these numbers and consider performance right from the beginning. So the redraw regions is what I'm saying, that if you enable this redraw regions, it actually visually tints the elements that are being redrawn, so you can actually see how much work is happening, is going on in order to make the scene actually appear as you want. So it's the texture that's being rasterized by the UI thread. So this is a very good indication of stuff that's not being offloaded to the GPU. So the dirty regions demo. Is this guy. So here we've got two rectangles. And the top one is a simple, I'm going to start these guys running. And the top one is a simple just translate transform. So we're just moving that rectangle around the screen. We've got an animation running forever, and you can see it's moving around. The bottom one, though, has got what's called an opacity mask on it. You can see that kind of stripe across it. So the opacity mask means that it has to be rendered on the UI thread. The top one is being rendered purely by the compositor thread, so you can see that there's no redraw regions. But like I said, the redrawing is always done by the UI thread. And because that animation is having to happen on the UI thread, you can see this shaded area is an indication of the whole area that's having to be
redrawn.
Now, there's an interesting side effect about this. You'll see it extends all the way down to the buttons at the bottom. And this is something that isn't immediately apparent to people. If I just show the XAML for that. So there's our animations. So here's our rectangle, which has got a simple render transform on it. So just moving it around the screen. That's the one that the compositor thread is handling all right. And then here's our rectangle with an opacity mask. But what's happening, you can see that that surface there, you can see it moving. What is happening is extending from the top of that rectangle down to the bottom of these buttons. So the whole region that's being redrawn is actually includes these buttons. Now, in this particular case, and here are these buttons, they're situated in the XAML immediately below that rectangle. And the order in here, you know, sometimes you think that actually the order in which you put things in the XAML doesn't make much difference because you just set your margins and it just positions it. So you could have something down here in the XAML that's actually physically positioned high up the screen because its margin is set, margins are set small to its offset from the edges of its container. But the order does make a difference because this is the order in which things get rendered. So because from this bit down, because the UI thread is having to re-render this because of this opacity mask, it's basically looking down to the bottom of this container and it's including these guys in it as well. So in this particular case, this redraw region here, you could get rid of this whole redraw region here in one of two ways. You could stick these buttons in their own canvas or something, their own container, or simply move them up above the other rectangle.
Okay, so what
and
you're saying
you can
is
improve
that
things,
you should use this thing to show you where the hotspots are and then juggle things around till it doesn't flicker as much.
That's right, Now then, I'm conscious that we haven't got a lot of time, so so I'm going to just talk a little bit about fill rate. So the fill rate is quite important. This is the one we overload in the GPU. This is the number of pixels included in all the textures that you pass to the GPU. So the fill rate number, which is the bottom one on those stats, is a value of 1 indicates a screen's worth, 800 by 480 pixels. And as you, and this is more and more, as more and more stuff gets offloaded to the compositor thread, the number of pixels that have been offloaded and are being cached and being animated over there, once you get to sort of more than, say, 4.5, you're only going to get 30 frames per second, and then 6.5, you get down to 20, and your users will start to see a real degradation. So let's stop this guy. So the fill rate demo, I've got to find that one. Here we go. This is one, actually, that we have to run on the device. Because this is one that the emulator really gives you incorrect results with.
Okay. We have to, this will probably be the last thing we'll show you,
actually. Yes, it is, yes. Yeah.
We've got the other guys championing at the bit. So I'm going to press some buttons so you can see what's on the screen, which is always a good thing to do. And then, hi, hello. So now we can take a look at the actual...
So this simple application, every time I hit add, it adds a new rectangle onto it, which is 1/8 of the width of the screen. And these are simple transforms, so they're being offloaded to the compositor thread. The fill rate at the moment is 1.5, so we can add loads of these guys. And the fill rate is jumping up to 2, to 3, and I'm trying to read those tiny numbers. So we actually have frames per second, we're down to 22, and we're starting to see a slight judder in here. We've got another visualization turned on to show the blue tint is the cache visualization, which is showing surfaces that are being offloaded to the GPU. And you can see that actually we're seeing the frame rate is currently 3, going to add a couple more, 3.2. Performance, you may not be catching this on live meeting, but it is degrading sometimes. Now, we've got these buttons at the bottom. I just want to show you, very interesting, the frame rate is currently 3.2, which is on the top right there. If I just hide these buttons at the bottom, frame rate drops immediately to 2.4 and the performance improves. You can see a blue tint there. That's because we had one whole surface which extended from the top buttons down to the bottom buttons because of the way that they were arranged in the XAML. So one whole surface of a whole screen's worth was adding one to the fill rate. So the fill rate has dropped by pretty much one now. So we've only got 2.4 of a fill rate, and our frames per second has jumped back up to 30, so we're getting decent performance again. So again, this shows the impact of the size of your surfaces and what is being offloaded.
This makes a phone appear to me a bit like a race car, in that once you've actually built the thing, you should spend some time tuning it.
Exactly.
And using the performance tools to find out where the hotspots are and then put those in the right place.
That leads very nicely onto the last slide that I'm going to show you, which is really a summary, really. Practices to drive performance. You need to identify your problem areas. Is it startup time, memory usage? Are you getting poor frame rate on your animations? And you need to monitor all the time as your changes are made. Keep monitoring that frame rate. And we're talking about obviously graphically rich applications with a lot of animations going on. Check your dirty regions, how much the cache visualization is effective, and test on the device often. And include your designers. This is really an area that the designers are the experts on, the people who live in Blend and know XAML inside out and get to know the effect of certain ways of arranging the XAML. So it's something you're going to have to spend some time understanding. So performance strategy, less is more, minimize the stuff that's going on in the UI thread, and leverage the GPU, and just keep on doing that, and make sure you run stuff on background threads when you can. So those really are the key things. Keep your visual trees very slim, use virtualization and redraw regions or techniques that you can do to actually visualize the effect of what you've got and what's happening. Okay. So I'm going to just simply close with a review of that. So the Windows Phone comes optimized, for good performance, but you do need to understand the architecture and the way that the Silverlight rendering engine is working. You need to avoid software rendering, by that I mean per frame callbacks. Know your visual tree and keep an eye on your startup times and avoid opacity masks and things like that. So.
Okay.
That wraps it up. Thank you very much for listening. If you're interested in this topic, I do advise you to go and watch the Channel 9 video that Jamie Rodriguez published recently. He goes into this in a lot more detail, and there's some really, really good content about understanding what's going on. And there's also a good white paper published about these creating high-performance Silverlight applications, which is essential reading for any designers working for Windows Phone. Thank you very much for your attention. We're going to take a short break now, and then we'll be back with a deep dive in depth on Metro Design and Expression Blend. Thank you very much.